screen are going up. A Football League Cup for the first time in their history. It's third time lucky in the playoffs.
Welcome to the Heavens Devils podcast, a Forest Green Rovers podcast by two Americans who don't know what they're talking about. My name is Nathan. This is Sean.
Heavens Devils podcast.
Christmas time is here. FGR is clear.
At the top of the table of League Two.
What a voice.
I know, it's beautiful, isn't it? Catch me on the next Coney Island video, the side talk Coney Island video.
Bing bong. Bing,
as I sound like the guy that's like, take me out to dinner.
Yeah, Joe Bob. Take me. What do you want to say to Joe Byron? Yeah. Take me out the dinner. You're right.
What do you want to tell Joe Byron right now?
What's up, baby? Take me out the dinner.
Hey, yo.
Anyway, Shimmy. Well, first of all, great song choice. Christmas time is here. FGR is clear at the top of the table. Yes, according to Lori Martin, I haven't done the math, but I would trust my life to Lori Martin. He says we're going to be top of the table at Christmas. We're mathematically guaranteed. I believe that, man. So let's go, Shimmy. Perfect reference. How are we feeling?
Well, like the song says, full of happiness and cheer that we've done so well up to this
happiness and cheer.
Exactly. So super happy just about how the boys have performed going into the end of the year.
The boys.
And then, you know, it's also nice for them every once in a while to give us an insanely entertaining / baffling performance like they did. But we'll get into that.
Yes, we'll talk all about that baffling performance, that crazy performance with one of our guests today, Phil Butterworth. We'll talk more about that in a second. But first, let's give some quick updates. First big update, Shimmy, we're coming in April.
Coming.
Flight booked April 14th to the 24th. That is Oldham at home. That is Bristol Rovers away. Finn to do the Gloucester Road pub crawl. Cannot wait. We'll give you more details about that. We want to try to get as many, you know, international people there as we can, if we can. It'd be awesome. That's a huge update. Yes. Another big update. We got a shout out. I think it was Billy Hunt helped us out. I think he hooked us up with the BBC. The BBC Mad Attack. If you didn't see, the BBC Sport did an amazing piece on the Mad Attack, which is, of course, the real deal, Jamil, and the people's champ, Maddie Stevens, who have been on fire and continue to be on fire this game. But anyway, they did an awesome piece on those two. If you haven't read it, you should really check it out. Beautiful. And JAMA is so complimentary of Maddie. Maddie's so complimentary of JAMA. It's just beautiful.
It's the bromance we all needed.
But, yeah, it's the bromance we all needed. But what I also, though, the bonus is they shouted us out. They said we are the whatever. They called us, what I don't know. They cited us as the Mad Attack nicknamers and as big nickname guys who only offer nicknames and pretty much nothing else to the Forest Green Rovers community. Yep. That was a big badge of honor, Shimmy.
It is. And just to further infuriate British citizens, I know, I think British people like to complain about the license fee they have to pay to the BBC. Well, we're going to get a cut of that now, so.
That's right. Let's go. Let's go. Still waiting for the Bug Scott, the Bugman Wagstaff to catch on, or Waggy P. What are those stupid ones? The HVAC repairman, Isaac Hutchinson. Yeah. Still waiting for those to catch on.
Someday.
Someday. All right, let's get into this pod, Shimmy. We got a big pod. So let's get us less of us talking, more of our guests talking. First up, we got Kip and Tony Graw, who actually went to the match. I think they left the match a little bit early, though, from what I think they left early to beat the traffic, so I don't know if they saw the end of it, but we've got a...
They're going to say the law was on to them. That's why they had to leave early.
Maybe that's it. So we got Kip and Tony. Right after Kip and Tony, we have the vice chairman of the Forest Green Rovers, Phil Butterworth. Awesome, dude. Awesome chat about, you know, Forest Green Rovers. About, we talk a lot about the match, analyze the match that happened on Saturday up at Oldham. We get a behind-the-scenes look at all the amazing things that he does for the club. And we talk about Cacti.
Yes. Wide-ranging. But you love it. You love it. What else can you ask for in a conversation?
Wide-ranging. Yeah. Little Cacti talk. Little Forest Green Rovers talk. But, man, no, seriously, Phil Butterworth, awesome dude. Oh, my God, and he closed it out with, like, he just dropped an insight bomb on us at the very end of the conversation.
Yeah, couldn't leave the conversation
awesome
without
dude.
Smiling and just being in awe, you know?
Yeah, great dude, man. I'm excited for you guys to hear that part. So shout out to Phil Butterworth. Thank you for coming on, man. It was such a good chat. And then after Phil, and by the way, I think I already said this, but with Phil, we also break down the game. We talk X's and O's and Jimmy's and Joe's or Johnny's and Joe's, whatever the phrase is. Anyway, after Phil, we go to Craig the Leg from Mansfield Matters, Mansfield Matters podcast. Also, Craig is the voice of the Mansfield Town Stags, as he is their version of Billy Hunt / Ash Leverage. I don't know which one he is, but he's one of the two. So we talked to Craig. We get the lowdown on Mansfield.
It might depend on how many times he mentions a basketball score. I think that would be the deciding factor. How many times during a match he mentions that there could be a basketball score involved in this game.
Yes. So big shout to Craig the Leg. Well, he'll get you all ready for the Mansfield Town match on Saturday, where we got to bounce back with a big win. And then we'll close out the show with a couple guests that have been on the pod in the past, Jimmy. Their Forest Green Rovers ties are tenuous, although I think they will both claim that they are Forest Green Rovers fans. But on Saturday afternoon, in the U.S. of A. was the MLS Cup, baby.
The championship.
The Portland, the championship, the finals. The Portland Timbers took on New York City FC in a crazy final, actually. Insane final. If you haven't, you should watch the highlights, because it was 1-0, and then Portland scored literally in the last second of stoppage time, the 94th minute.
Which a goal that probably should not have stood, by the way. But
probably should
but no
not,
VAR.
Sure, but no VAR here, thank God, because that it would have taken all the drama and excitement out of the game. So anyway, went to extra time, went to penalty kicks. Awesome, awesome match. But anyway, point is, we have on at the very end two Forest Green Rovers fans, but one is a Portland Timbers fan, another one is an NYC FC fan.
Both were at the match.
Were in attendance. They were both at the game, at the final. One is, first of all, your friend, Davey Mohabier. Secondly is 15-year-old Jack, our friend 15-year-old Jack, and we haven't done this chat yet, so I'm very interested in what's going to happen, because David, awesome guy, huge personality, but he uses a lot of profanity. Yeah. So it's going to be very interesting to see this adult man who just lost, whose team just lost, interact with a 15-year-old boy.
Whose team just won. And who won their first ever title in their existence.
Yes. So I expect a lot of, we're going to have to use the beep out button quite a bit. Okay, but before we get into it, before we keep going with this pod, we got to talk about the other half of the club, the Forest Green Rovers women's team, who played on Sunday and got the dub. They got the 4-1 lead and did not blow it, unlike our men's team. So 4-1 against Middlezoy. What a name!
Middlezoy
Rovers, Forest
what
Green Rovers.
Name.
Middlezoy Rovers.
It sounds like they brought in a team from like another dimension. Yeah. Sort of like the Monstars in Space Jam. It's like Middlezoy.
I love it. So nice little home match. 18 minutes in, Charlie Rollins scored the opener for the Forest Green Rovers, 1-0. Boom. Fast forward 12 minutes later, Charlie Rollins, another one. That's two. She's on the brace, the Destiny's Child herself on the brace. And then Hae Jones, 44 minutes right before the break, right before the interval. Boom, 3-0, scores a goal. All she does is score goals, but not today. Today, all Charlie Rollins does is score goals, because we go to the second half, 59 minutes, and Charlie Rollins gets the hat trick, baby. 4-0 to the Rovers. Hey, it's the Christmas, it's the holiday season. So Forest Green Rovers gave out a goal in the 77th minute, just to be nice.
Gotta be generous,
Gotta be generous, but awesome win. And we know that Cam Hoffman was there. Kay Hoffman was there. All the Hoffmans were there. That was beautiful.
Chris Latham is there as well.
Stat man Chris Latham was there. You love to see it. I'm sure other people were there as well. But man, great to see like some more people going out to support this amazing, amazing team and this amazing club. But big shout out to Hattie, man. She had to be the woman of the match, I would imagine.
Oh, you mean Charlie? Sorry, Charlie, right?
Charlie, my bad. Sorry, Charlie. I just wanted to say
all Hattie Jones does is score goals normally.
You're right. But today it was the Charlie Rollins show, and we were just happy to be a part of it, baby. So shout out to the women's team. 4-1. Did not blow the 4-1 lead. Awesome. Awesome stuff.
Keep it up, ladies. You guys are making us proud.
Let's go.
Entire fan base proud.
All right, Shimmy, let's get to Kip and Tony to hear their take on the Forest Green Rovers men's game on Saturday against Oldham. Here we go. Take it away, Kip and Tony.
Kip Kowalski here, and I'm joined by the Bayou Baby, Tony Gras.
Bonjour, baby.
We go to the empty Boundary Park, where Oldham supporters set their own boundaries as they boycott the match in protest of the greedy owner, White Kala Abdallah Lemzagram. First action in the 11th minute as KD Kevin Durant Davis hits a 30-yard jumper as he tries to impress Forest Green Rovers so he can lead his crap team that he's on and chase rings by joining the front runners while having Twitter meltdowns. But no burner account needed to defend his beautiful long-range rocket to give the Latics a 1-0 lead.
Modul, but FGR and them boys quickly responded as that big, beautiful bell, Big Daddy Kate Wilson, find a through ball that found our boy Jack Aitchison, who buries it from 8 yards away. Goal!
The Traveling Force Green Rovers fans break into song led by Dylan Banks.
And that's about the time the Scots scored a goal for me.
Nobody likes you when you're from Dundee. And don't want to miss your Highland Hammer throws.
What the hell's his XG?
My friends say I should pass it H. That's Jack Aitchison. That's Jack Aitchison. What a touching tribute to Blink-182.
We move to the 27th minute as the People's Champ, Matty Stevens, find his partner, the real deal, Jamil Matt, the autocrat, Putin, who suppresses the opposition voice and continues his quest to take over Ukraine. Goal! 2-1 to the Rover.
And just a petite few minutes later, Jamma would score his Baker's Dozen goal, just like a Baker's Dozen of beignets. That's Tricky Nicky Cadden, King of the Cross. He's not a crew king, but King of the Cross, Mother of Dragons, and Protector of the Realm, finds Jamma head just before the break. Lightning.
Goal! 3-1 Rovers! Halftime and Coach Rob subs out JMT Dynamite!
Dynamite!
JMT! He's sick! Give him some Pedialyte! JMT! Moving and grooving to the 48th minute with Matty the Batty Stevens, who says, I'm a Scalsa, and Scalsas don't get knocked out! Goal! 4-1 to the Rovers! And that is surely the match! Tony, game over, Tone, game over. Kip and Tony are out of here. Let's beat the traffic. What do you say, Tone?
Le bon ton boulet.
Oh, yeah. We win this one 4-1. We assume. We didn't stay for the end, but we assume we ended up winning this one 4-1.
Wow, Tony! They should not have left so early, you know? They tried to beat the traffic.
They should not have left so early.
Beat the law, perhaps.
Got to beat the traffic or on the run because the authorities were on to them. Well, actually, they were smart to leave. When we were up 4-1, because they left with pure joy.
Yeah, they're
going to
come back next week as thrilled as ever. So,
all right, well, Shimmy, let's get to our chat with Phil Butterworth, the vice chairman of the Forest Green Rovers. Awesome chat. We talk a lot about the game against Oldham on Saturday, and then we talk a lot about behind-the-scenes stuff with Forest Green Rovers, all kinds of really like fascinating insights. And then, like I said before, he drops a bomb on us at the very end. An insight bomb, I guess I should say. We're not breaking any news here, but like an insight bomb.
And that's the only
wisdom.
Way that Americans awesome can chat. Actually receive insight, because we spend $700 billion on our defense budget. So insight bombs are the only ways right. We know. The only way we know.
We only under, yes, the military industrial complex. Anyway, let's go to our man, Phil Butterworth. Boom. We welcome to the pod the man with the biggest cactus collection in Gloucestershire. He loves the Matt Attack Strike partnership so much, he named his own children after them. His son, Matt, for both Matts, I assume. His daughter, Emma, I assume is a derivative of Jamma. He is a man who listens to Leonard Cohen to calm his soul after 10 goal thrillers. When he's not ensuring cacti have adequate sunlight, he plays a massive role at Forest Green, working in recruitment, leadership, the Supporters Club, green initiatives, and he's the brain behind the Ambassadors Program. Some call him the buttress of Windsor of FGR. He's the vice chairman, my vice chairman, your vice chairman, our vice chairman.
Yes.
He loves the smell of freshly baked bread, don't we all? The vice chairman of the Forest Green Rovers, Phil Butterworth. Welcome to the pod, Phil.
Hi, guys. What a welcome. How on earth did you find all that history about me? Incredible.
We have sources. We can't reveal them.
Yeah.
Just one correction. It's cacti. Cacti, the biggest cacti collection, mate.
Well, you're right. You're right. Cacti. Thank you.
Nathan.
Grammar is not our strong suit.
Yeah, you're a testament to the American education system.
That's right. Yeah, grammar's not our strong suit, as Sham's mother-in-law is quick to point out many times.
Right, yep.
Man, I love it. Phil, great to meet you, Phil Butterworth. A very, very non-vegan surname, though. What were your ancestors' butter churners, Phil?
Yeah, they were from up in Lancashire, up north in England. And they worked in the valleys churning butter out. That's quite right.
Oh, that's interesting. I was talking about this the other day with a friend, how the surname thing has kind of come full circle in the modern world. You know, most European surnames, old surnames are, you know, they're either like from the father, like Jackson, Johnson, McDonald, or they're like occupational, like Smith, Miller. Mine's Weber. Occupational, Weber, which means like, you know, my ancestors were weavers back in Germany. Or it's like a surname based on the place that they associate you with, you know, like Lake, Field, Sutton, London. But it's come full circle in that if you look at my iPhone right now, so many of the names of my iPhone are like James Work, Rowan, FGR, Ben Lawyer, like back in my dating days, Tanya, Amelia's Party, you know, it's just like first name. And then where do I know that person from? Just interesting how it's come, you know, full circle into the modern world. But anyway,
we hope to be Nathan and Sham for screen in time.
Yeah.
We want to be associated with it. So
yes, that's our hope. Exactly. So we hope that we're in there in your phone as that, Phil.
One of our old supporters changed his name to Forest Green about 30 years ago.
Really?
Wait, is that true?
Name to Forest and his surname to Green.
Oh, no way. There's no way that's real.
No, really? That's cool. He lives on the Isle of Wight now. Yeah.
Interesting. Wow.
That is amazing. There we go.
That sounds like something somebody would do to get like free drinks at the Green Man or something.
That's right. It's
like, you know, I own this place, right?
Forest Green. That's amazing. I love this story. Anyway, so I want to get to the game from yesterday. I want to hear your thoughts on the game from yesterday and really hear your thoughts on the whole season and also get into your role as vice chairman. But first, I'm very curious about the cacti. First of all, how do you grow cacti in the cloudy skies of Southwest England? Don't they need like a lot of sun and dry weather?
But the basics is they can't cope with temperatures less than 10 degrees. So they've got to be inside in the winter. I have a lot of them outside in our summer, but then come September, October, they've all got to come inside. I've got about 150 of them. So,
oh my goodness, 150.
They don't need any water in the winter. So they kind of go to sleep and hibernate. So it's season is about 6 months. So March, April through to September, I need to tend them and look after them. But yeah, then they go to sleep. I used to have a tortoise. It was the same. It hibernated for a few months over here. Yeah. And it's great because it's not with you all the time. But the cacti are great. I just love them. And I came to see a lot in Arizona, in your country.
Let's go. I've got two right here, by the way.
Hey, nice.
So I got two. I'm only 148.
You didn't just run out and buy them, did you? You didn't just buy them for this interview, did you?
No, I did. I have 100. I'm 148 behind you, Phil. But wait, you said you've been to Arizona?
I've been to Arizona, seen the giant saguaro. Yeah.
That's, oh, wow. So beautiful out there, man.
Yeah. And I've seen a few in South America as well. But I just love cultivating them at home. And I've got a few at Forest Green overwintering as well.
Oh, that's so... Yeah, we heard that the hospitality suites have a lot of Phil's cacti in them.
Yeah.
Yeah, a few. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, what is it about the cacti? How did you fall in love with the cacti?
I was given one by my gran when I was about 8 years old. In fact, it was similar to the one that you just showed me, Nathan. It was an aloe. And then into my teens, I started showing them at exhibitions and starting to sell a few to make a few bucks.
Nice.
And it's just grown over the years.
No pun intended. It's grown over the years. That's amazing. That's awesome.
And I'm thinking about how much you've saved yourself on like security systems over the years, Phil. Yeah. Like 150 cactus, no one's messing with your place, right?
Yeah, get the chicken fair where you don't want people. That's right.
Oh, I love that.
Beautiful. What? I love that it's a lifelong obsession too. Just that, you know, you got this gift that has such a, you know, personal connection to your grandmother, and then, man, you just kept it up. So cool.
Yeah. That's so cool. Well, on to the match yesterday, kind of a prickly match as well. What were your thoughts on that match, Phil?
Well, after Harrogate on Tuesday, I was so enthusiastic. I kind of sprung out of bed, had a real bounce in the step, and I was raring to go. You know, I just thought this is going to be a fantastic match. So I met up with my two buddies en route. We had a good journey up there. And to be honest, when we saw the players out on the pitch, I just thought it's not going to be a walk in the park, but I think we're going to be dominant. And yeah, that's the way it started. We were looking good.
Yeah.
We started far better than up at Harrogate, first 5-10 minutes. We got an early goal. And yeah, the first half, we played some fluent football. We showed our class. Midfield attack, defence, everybody was playing well. And yeah, it was 3-1 at half time. And chatting to the directors up there, they were very downcast. Obviously, it was a match they needed to win. Mm-hmm. And they could just see we were just top-notch, and it's why they were struggling. And they could foresee a hatful of goals in the second half. And then, obviously, the second half started well. You know, we got a goal, and you think, geez, no one had it for, you know, double figures today. Matt and Matty, they're brilliant. And then things just kind of seemed to go a bit kind of haywire. It was just, I don't know whether I've ever seen a match like it. I mean, credit to Oldham, they did get back in the match. Yeah. And we were leaving space. We weren't getting our tackles in. We weren't getting the blocks in. And yeah, it got to kind of 4-3. We did get back to 5-3. And then I thought, you know, we are going to win this one.
Yeah.
Their supporters and their players were so hungry. Got back to 5-5 each, and it was freaky. It really was. I don't think that kind of thing will ever be repeated. But I mean, every season you get one or two matches that are a bit strange.
Yeah,
and yesterday was the one.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was like they were drunk. It was a drunk match. It was so weird.
Yeah. How were the directors at the end of the match? Were they a little more upbeat, or just were they just as befuddled as you?
Sean, the big picture's fantastic. We're doing terrifically. We've got a 10-point lead down to four places, 11 points if you look at goal difference. So it really was a one-off. But yeah, we were dumbfounded, and we're trying to think of the reason. And obviously, Jordan Moore-Taylor going off was a big factor.
Right.
Because a very reliable central defender, and he'd been playing well, but he wasn't feeling too good. So obviously Rob made the right decision and took him off. But we missed him in the second half. Mm-hmm. And the back three, they did start to look a little bit nervous. But obviously we've had two long journeys this week, so possibly tiredness set in. But we just lost our kind of world-class skills, which we're very good at.
Yeah, we've been flying this year so far, and just it's always been on display.
And I want to go back to your...
Sorry, mate?
Oh, I was just going to say, you mentioned the halftime substitution. So I want you to take off your cacti gardening hat for a minute, put on your Coach Phil hat. So there seemed to be a kind of a consensus among supporters that when you take JMT off, it should have been Dan Sweeney who came on rather than Dokes, because Dan Sweeney's the big physical presence, the dominating like central defender. He's a veteran. He seems like the better choice in a lot of supporters' view to kind of maintain that lead, whereas Dokes maybe is more of the player you want in when you're behind because of his ability on the ball, his crazy ability to start attacks from the back. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think in hindsight, that's what I would have done. But, you know, I don't know what was going through Rob's mind. I mean, 3-1, he probably thought the match was won. And certainly when it went to 4-1, I could totally respect what he'd done.
Yep.
I turned around to Richard Hughes and I said, Rich, it'd be a great game to bring Jack Evans on. Which was a thing to say because Jack actually wasn't on the bench. But I mean, it did feel as if we were coasting. So those three should have been able to handle things. But Dan might not have been fully fit. I don't know. I don't know what the explanation was. Or he might have just wanted to give Dokesy more game time to get him back to full fitness. you know, it's like St. Albans. You can't kind of say these things a mistake when you've got the benefit of hindsight.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's a big phrase in the United States. Yeah, in the United States, we have a big phrase. You're the Monday morning quarterback because Sunday's our big NFL day here. Yeah. So, you know, that's like we've perfected that as an art form here. Monday morning quarterback.
Yes, that's right. I'm judging AI exactly from our couch. Judging what the coach has done, but I honestly, like, if I'm in Rob Edwards' shoes, I probably would have done the same thing because Doakes needs more. He needs playing time. He needs to get back from full fitness from his injury, from his suspension. He needs playing time, and this seems like a perfect opportunity. Like, we're up 3-1, and it was dominating. I mean, their one goal in the first half was just like a beautiful wonder goal, but just kind of a freak goal. So it looks like, you know, we got this game locked up. Yeah, let's get Doakes in there, get him some more playing time, and get him back to full fitness. So I totally get the move in, at the time, but I guess you can't take anything for granted in this league. Because, it was insane. Yeah, 4-1, too, just like you, Phil. I was like, oh, game over. My wife actually watched the match with me up until that point, and then she's like, oh, 4-1, all right, I'm going to the gym. So I was like, cool, go have fun at the gym. She comes back, and she saw the 5-5 draw. She's like, what happened? Just an insane, like you said, just crazy. One of those crazy matches that, you get every year. But confident that it'll just be, you know, a one-off and a great learning opportunity for the young Rob Edwards. Yeah. It seems like every time we have a disappointment, we bounce back. So, you know, Port Vale, Swindon, St. Albans, after each of those disappointing performances and disappointing results, we bounce back. And, I'm confident that it's going to happen again. What do you think, Phil?
100%. I've no worries whatsoever. You've just said those matches when we weren't very good, and then the following week, the lads worked hard in training. There was no big post-mortem and blaming anybody. Mm-hmm. It was just one of those things. And as long as you learn from your mistakes, mm-hmm. you know, there's not a problem. And the whole season so far has been one of continuous improvement. You know, every week has been better. And that's shown, obviously, by the data, by the league table, the number of goals we've scored, the excellence of the defence. I mean, the last 14 games until yesterday, we'd only conceded, I think it was five goals.
Yeah.
Seven goals. So obviously yesterday was very, very different than it's been in the last 14 matches. So we can't be too hard on the defence. Yep. You know, it's just one of those things. The weather was bad. The Oldham fans were going wild. They really were. And I'm glad for them. You know, they needed that.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. Huge credit to the supporters, the player, the Oldham players. I mean, unbelievable comeback from their perspective. And, like you say, you can't be too hard on the defense. I mean, our attack obviously gets so much credit because of how many – it's ridiculous how many goals they're scoring. But our defense has been phenomenal. The back line has been phenomenal. Luke McGee.
Yeah.
And he bailed us out again. And I forget what minute that was, maybe like minute 8.
When there was that's right, yeah.
Yeah, amazing save from Luke McGee to kind of keep us in it early. So, credit to, you know, the whole team. Rough one, whatever, we put it behind us and learned from it.
I think Rob Edwards had mentioned after the match yesterday in his post-match interview that it was the first time he saw maybe some of the guys look a little leggy, right? So maybe like all of the high, press and the energy we brought to the early season is maybe caught up to us. And I think you kind of expect that around this point. So again, it's something for everyone to learn from, right? Whether it's the coaching staff, like rotating, you know, understanding the right sort of thing. I know Phil's a big Leonard Cohen fan. So we were all, expressing a cold and a broken hallelujah for that one point as we left Boundary Park. But I think the future is bright.
Let's go. Yes.
Well, I did play some Leonard Cohen on the journey back. I have to
say. Great choice. Great choice. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Gives me up.
Beautiful. Wonderful. Beautiful. So I guess on the season so far, what are your thoughts, Phil?
Oh, it's just been, I won't say a surprise because there was a lot of expectation because we've got a good squad we've inherited for last year. And Rob came to us with great credentials, not just as a manager, but as a guy as well. And he seemed to bond very quickly with the players. They spoke very highly of him. And to be fair, you know, he followed a good coach. Mark was very, very good on the pitch, and the players accepted that they learned a lot from him, and he got us promotion. But Rob established excellent relationships early on. The pre-season tour went very well. And yeah, right from the start, the potential was clear. First match wasn't easy against Sutton.
Yeah,
You know,
they're a good team too. They're a good side.
A very good team. So they've proved themselves as the season's gone on. But I mean, we've been top of the league all but 2 weeks, really. So yeah. It is fantastic, and there's been some really great highs. Some of the matches we've just been terrific, and it's not just our fans saying that. It's opposition fans and opposition directors, and you know, people who film the match. We're strong in every position. It's a balanced side. There's a great togetherness, and yeah, it's fantastic. But obviously, the season's nowhere near over.
Right. So, I want to ask you about that in a second. But impossible question here: who is your player of the season so far?
It's got to be Kane Wilson.
Yeah.
Since I've been watching Forest Green, I think possibly, except for Ethan Pinnock, he is the star man. I mean, when you see him dribbling up that wing, he's just like George Best used to be. The odd time I watch Man United as a youngster. He is superb. And his passes are great. He is phenomenal. But having said that, I mean, Jamil Matt has continued where he left off last season. Nicky Cadden up the wing. I think those three are my crown jewels so far for the season. But again, having said that, I think Dom Bernard has been a lot of people surprised. He's so steady, so reliable, so versatile. Yes. And Matthew Stevens, hey, after the season he had last year, three or four goals, not getting into the Stevenage side. He's red hot. He's fantastic. Yeah. So it's not easy to choose your favourite players, but if I was pushed, I think I would say Kane Wilson because he's so exciting.
Oh, yeah. That's why I said it's an impossible question because there is so much talent. Yeah. And
you name one,
just
name one person, you think of someone else, right? Immediately.
Yeah. I mean, if you ask me the best acquisition.
Exactly.
Ben Stevenson,
Kane, though.
Go on, mate.
Oh, no, I was just saying, Kane does not, he doesn't belong on this. You know, in this league, he's so good. And speaking of that, very scary.
You don't want to lose it, Nathan. He does.
All right, I'll edit that out. When I said that, I mean he belongs in the National League.
Yeah.
He doesn't belong in League 2. He belongs in the National League. Any scouts listening, he's not good enough. Oh, no, we don't want to say that because then Wrexham's going to take him. He belongs in whatever's below that league. But on that note, Phil, January coming very soon. Any fears? Who do you think anyone's leaving? What are your thoughts on the January transfer window?
Well, there's a lot of agents, a lot of clubs sniffing around, as they would do when you see a team as young as Forest Green produce performances that we do. But obviously, Dale wants to keep them all, and if the players want to stay here, then obviously that's what we want. But you can't actually stand in the way of a player if he gets a great offer from, say, a championship club, you know, with double, tripling, quadrupling his wages. But, I mean, there's nothing I know that makes me think anybody's going to leave at the moment. But I know Rich Hughes has been out scouting. He's been watching other players just in case.
Right.
We've got to replace people, but I hope not. I mean, obviously, Kane Wilson and Nicky Cadden are the ones, I guess, that you'd think were most likely to get big bids in for. But, you know, Kane must be worth £1 million now, the way he's playing.
Hell yeah.
So is anyone going to come in with that kind of money? Don't know.
Yeah.
But Dale won't want him to go. Right. Dale's been loyal.
Maybe one of the scary things too about Kane is he only has 6 months left on his contract, so he'll be free. Well, I mean, obviously, I'm sure we will offer him whatever we can to stay. But you worry about losing him and not getting anything kind of in return for that. But Kane, if you're listening, Wagamama, his favorite restaurant, it only exists in Gloucestershire, so don't go anywhere else. You're not going to find Wagamama. Stay with us. And then Rob Edwards, that's another fear, you know, we all have. He's so good. Why are we going to lose him to a big club pretty soon, too?
I mean, one of the reasons he came to Forest Green is he'd seen Dale's loyalty to managers, and he appreciates the values of Forest Green, the vision of the owner and the directors. And I think he's loving it. He's enjoying life at Forest Green. Yeah. And I mean, that's a big thing, isn't it? If you're very happy every day working with the group of players, the kind of places where you're working and your colleagues, I can't see that in the short term. And he can earn himself a fantastic reputation at Forest Green, and then he'll take a big set. And he's learning a lot. He'd be the first to learning about club management. So I think Rob's going to be with us for a couple of seasons.
Oh my goodness. That would be a dream. I love to hear that. So let's talk about... Oh, sorry, Phil?
Well, you know, he's got a good sidekick in Richie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we complement each other very well. Yeah.
You know, the fans adore both of them. The players adore both of them. And, you know, it's just, you can see, I mean, you can see it in the performance on the pitch, but also when you talk to them. So it was the absolute perfect hire. And we want to talk to you about recruitment and hiring in just a minute. But first, let's move to your role at the club, Phil. You taught at Dursley and Tewkesbury. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. And by the way, you won't get more English-sounding names than those. Also, fun fact from our man Chris Latham. He says that the town of Dursley was the inspiration for the name of the Dursley family in Harry Potter. I don't know if that's true. But anyway, that's what Chris Latham said.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
For 7 years, Tewkesbury for a year, and then Gloucester for 25 years.
Yes, so you were a head teacher in Gloucester for 25 years. Now in your post-education career, your retirement, I guess you never retire from being a teacher, right? You're always teaching. But in your official occupational retirement, you are now vice chairman of the Forest Green Rovers. How does that happen? How did you get this role?
Well, I've been a very dedicated fan for 25 years. Mm. I've done lots of things in a voluntary capacity that have been successful. I completely support Dale in his sustainability mission and trying to obviously promote the green credentials of Forest Green. Not just locally, but nationally and internationally. And anything I can do to support that, I do. And the previous vice chairman, David Drew, I don't know whether you've spoken to David, but he was elected to Parliament and there was a vacancy. And it was a shot of a dart. Dale just rang me up and can't he be vice chairman?
That's awesome.
It's unusual in football, A, to have a teacher as a director.
Right.
Teachers haven't got much money. You know, normally when you're a director, you're investing a lot of money in the club. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I do hope I can invest in the club in the future, but you know, at the moment, money's not the reason Dale asked me to join. But I mean, I've watched them home and away. I like to represent the club. So even before I became vice chairman, I often traveled with other directors and met the directors of foreign opposition teams. And, you know, hopefully Dale thought that I would fit the bill.
Yeah. I got to say, for so many of like Dale, you know, Dale has, there's so many things you can compliment Dale on, but one thing he seems to be unbelievable at is recognizing talent with like just
talent and character.
Exactly, talent and character. Yeah. Like Henry, he barely even met Henry and just like, yeah, you're in, you're the right guy. Richard Hughes, like it's just amazing what he, you know, the pieces it's just amazing the pieces that he's been able to put together. It seems like that's one of his great strengths is recognizing potential, talent, character. And that's really why I think, you know, this club has been so successful because of the leadership that we have at the top, which I want to talk about in a little bit.
It's Rob, it's Rich, and it's Richie. Mm-hmm. And being in education all my life, the 3 hours are important when you're teaching. But as far as leadership is concerned, you know, we've got those three, and obviously we've got Dale the driver on top of them, and it's great as far as leadership's concerned, and they share the same values, the same passions, and yeah, it's working. Great recruitment.
Yeah,
I love that. The 3 R's are the foundation. So good. And you're giving us hope, because both Nathan and I are involved in education as well. So maybe we'll one day be
directors of, or the vice chairman of a football club.
Yeah.
Only Forest Green, though. We would only go to Forest Green. We're not going to sell our soul to any other club. Only Forest Green.
Yeah. So maybe if you know, God forbid, they're ever in the Isthmian League somehow. Well, that's when they're going to call us up. So
that's right. Or maybe it's like, I don't know if you guys have ever seen The Producers, the play. If for some reason Dale wants to tank the club, he'll hire us as vice chairman. Yeah, exactly. we're your guys to tank the club. The recruitment is unbelievable. And, I want to ask you about that. What's our secret philosophy to hiring? Like, why are we so good at hiring, Phil? You, Henry, Richard Hughes, Rob Edwards, Richie Kyle, the training staff, which we don't know much about the training staff, but all the players just sing their praises and talk about how the training staff has really limited their time out. Like, we are such a tiny club, yet we have such good leadership, such good hiring. What's behind that?
Well, I mean, choosing the right people is the thing in life, you know, any organization, any business, even personal friends and relationships, life partners. I think that's crucial to kind of happiness. And yeah, they seem to be getting it right. The thing is, it's not just as far as football is concerned, it's not just ability and skill, it's character and attitude. And you don't want a wrong one, do you? You know, you want people that want to grow, that are keen to learn, that are able to focus on their, you know, what they're at the club for. And that's what they do. And as far as Rob's concerned, I mean, he treats people as human beings first, then as footballers second. Mm. You know, he's formed excellent relationships. There's a lot of trust. He's got a lot of emotional intelligence. And all those factors, I think, are very important for leaders. And, those are the kind of things they look for when they're bringing people into the club.
Yeah, 100%. Like, we've been so lucky to speak with so many people, players, Rob, and it's just remarkable, the character, you know, of all these people. Like, just the every single player we've met is, like, unbelievably mature, unbelievably focused, just unbelievably, like, a good human being. And when we talked with Richard Hughes about that, he kind of said, like, he implicitly said, like, yeah, that's like one of the key things we look for is character over, you know, talent's important, obviously, potential's important, but character is like the number one thing. And you see that with it's an unbelievable, like, the quality of human beings that are involved in this football club. And again, like you said, it's about choosing the right people. It's the key to success and happiness in life and in same football.
Same thing with the podcast, too. Honestly, the reason we've kept doing this podcast is every person we've met affiliated with the club, whether player or coaching staff or front office, has like made us feel like we've learned a lot about what the ethos at Forest Green is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, we have laughs. We get to learn about who they are as an individual. So, even as two guys who know really absolutely nothing about, you know, football, we're still like so intrigued by what this club is.
Well, that sense of humor is important as well, isn't it? Having a bit of fun, having a laugh, you know, having a bit of ribbing with each other. And the players are like that. They're very together, you know, they have fun together. If they stay in a hotel, which they often do for an away match, they all kind of muck in together and chat together and talk rather than just disappear into the rooms, you know. Like the England team now. I mean, that's one reason why they succeed a lot better now than they used to do, because it used to be very cliquey, whereas now, Southgate, there's excellent bonded and mutual respect, and that's certainly what there is at Forest Green.
Yeah.
But don't get me wrong, people are held to account as well. Mm-hmm. You've got to produce the goods. They've got to train well, they've got to keep to a diet, they've got to get the sleep, they've got to be there on time. You know, there's expectations. And yeah, I think in any walk of life, if you get the basics right, off the pitch and on the pitch, you're going to do well.
100%.
Yeah, Nathan, I just want to bring something up. You know, because again, like we're both affiliated with education as well. And Nathan, I think I remember you once talking about that slogan, like accountability is love. Right.
Yeah.
So I just feel like that's also applies to this club, where it's like when the players meet up, you know, meet their end of the bargain and show that drive and willingness to learn, that that's where all, like you said, all the good energy and all the camaraderie comes from.
Yeah. I mean, people like being held to account. You know, you celebrate what they've done, what they've achieved. And, if you know, if there's something they're not doing well, if you can help them to be better, they should like that as well. And certainly everybody around them does. You know, if people get away with not doing things properly, nobody benefits. And certainly as far as developing a team ethos, you don't want any slackers around you. You want everybody to be motivated and to be the best they can be. And that's what we seem to be being at the time. Now, yesterday was a bit of a blip mind. You know, nobody can be outstanding all the time.
Sure. And,
you know, everybody's got to realize that. Everybody can have an off day.
Yep.
And you can't get too hung up about it. You know, you learn from it and then you draw a line under it and just get on with the next match. Which we
exactly.
And hopefully we'll do that after yesterday. But, I mean, we scored 5 goals yesterday.
Yeah.
Right.
Still good for entertainment value. Yeah.
Yes. There were a lot of positives from yesterday among the negatives, but a couple of things you said. One, the last thing you said about, like, yeah, we all have bad days, and that's the unique thing about being a footballer is your bad day at the office is everybody sees it and everyone has an opinion on it, whereas when I have a bad day at the office, nobody knows, nobody cares. So it's quite a unique place to be in as a footballer, and you have to, you know, learn mental toughness and resilience, and that's another thing I think our players have. And you mentioned also just the closeness of this team. Rob Edwards, in an interview, I forget where it was, but recently mentioned that how, like, when they go out to team dinners, the dinner's over, and every team he's been on in the past, as soon as dinner's over, you know, players go their separate ways, whatever. With this team, everyone's there for like an hour and a half, still 2 hours after the dinner's ended, just, you know, still hanging out, talking. And it's a beautiful thing that's been cultivated really by everyone who's a part of this club to really make it feel like a family. And kind of speaking of building that up, so I want to talk about something that you created. You masterminded really the ambassador program at Forest Green Rovers that takes kids from over 70 schools in the community to help promote the football club and its sustainable ethos and green values. So tell us a little bit more about that program and why it's important to indoctrinate the youth.
I don't think it's indoctrinating them. When I first started watching Forest Green, a tiny little village club, non-league club, but I was kind of impressed by the football and the family atmosphere. And yet you wander around the area and nobody wore a Forest Green shirt. You see Manchester United shirts, you see Chelsea, Man City, Gloucester Rugby, but not a Forest Green shirt. And I just was determined to raise the profile of the club. And initially, I asked the previous chairman if I could take players into schools. And he agreed to that, Trevor Horsley. I did that for 2 or 3 years.
Oh, wow.
And the schools were very receptive. The kids loved it. The players, it broadened their outlook. But it didn't really have any impact on the crowds. So I kind of thought, well, we need to have somebody in all these schools representing Forest Green. So I thought, let's try and get ambassadors. A pupil in as many schools as possible that will promote the team, that will put the fixtures on the board, stick photographs up, write reports. So I went around a lot of schools, and the first year I got eight schools, all boys, all primary schools, so all under 11, and they were dead keen. Some people were a little bit cynical, saying they won't stick at it, but over the next 5-8 years, it grew from 8 to 10 to 30 to 40 to 50 to 80, and now it's nearly 100.
Oh,
it's
now I see that. Wow.
The girls are just as keen as the boys. There's primary schools, secondary schools, colleges, further education, and they're all sold on not just the football, which is fantastic, but also the green side of the school, the green side of the club, and that's what gets the schools on board.
Yeah.
And obviously, when the kids are talking about their team in assembly or in the class, it's developing their speaking skills. When they're writing reports, it's developing their writing. The Green Devil, the magazine, they contribute to that.
Wow.
About writing for an audience. It's very, very popular, and we've now got ambassadors in Yorkshire and the northwest of England, and they come to so many matches. And the great thing is, it raised crowd numbers.
Yes,
and we've probably got more families and children attending matches at Forest Green than any other club, really. It's a great family atmosphere, and the kids help out on match days. It's fantastic. And they love wearing the shirt. They have so much pride in the Forest Green shirt. The players as well speak to them. I mean, after the Harrogate match, one of our little kids, Toby, he's only 10, because it was his birthday, he went up to Harrogate. I don't know what his school thought about it, but Rob had found out that it was Toby's birthday, and he said to Kane, let's give him your shirt, and they went out and they gave him his shirt. I mean, that kind of rapport and liaison is fantastic. I mean, sometimes people think footballers are aloof. And I think possibly the higher they get up the pyramid, it's inevitable. Sure. But at our level and Division One level, they shouldn't be. They should mix in, and people should see they're just normal people. Mm-hmm. Or who care about the fans. And you'll notice in all the interviews that the players do, they do praise the fans, and the manager praises the fans. I think that kind of rapport is so important.
Oh, no question. We've heard it from so many fans. Don't want to, you know, get too much into the, you know, our old manager, but one big difference that a lot of the fans tell us is, like, after every away game, before and after, Rob comes over, speaks to the fans, claps the fans, and it just means so much to the fans that spend a ton of money, you know, spend their time, like, traveling hours away to see this team. It just means so much to them that the manager just comes over and shows his appreciation for it. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, after an 11-hour coach ride to Carlisle, right?
That's right. And the program, the ambassador program, is so brilliant in both pushing the, you know, teaching the ideas, I don't want to say pushing, but teaching the ideas of green living, sustainable living, and then also making fans, you know, of the environment, as Dale always says, but also making fans of Forest Green Rovers from these kids. It's awesome. I love that.
They learn how to cook a meal, you know.
It's a great gateway. Oh, sorry. Did you say that again?
You know, we do cooking sessions with them every year, so they learn how to cook a vegan meal, and they'll go out litter picking, you know, on the beaches and the streets, all those kind of things.
That's awesome. So I kind of want to tangentially related. You mentioned how this program really has improved support. It's creating a new generation of supporters. It's helping to facilitate this family atmosphere. But I want to stay on that. Like, how do we continue to improve support, improve home turnout? You know, we're a small club, and I think we should take pride in that. It's awesome to be a small club. I think we should embrace the tin pot nicknames. I love it when teams call us tin pot and then we smoke them on the pitch. You know, it's a pride being a small club and just punching above our weight. But I would love to see the new lawn, you know, sold out, like the Bristol Rovers home match atmosphere. That was phenomenal, for example. How do we attract regular support like that? How do we get that every match?
Well, it's grown a lot. It's quadrupled really over the last 10, 12 years. Obviously, the ground has its limitations as far as parking's concerned. It's not easy. But if we keep talking to people about it, you know, and they keep seeing the publicity that's coming about Forest Green, the crowds are going to keep on growing. Obviously, we've got the problem with this virus, haven't we, at the moment? There's a lot of people who normally went to Forest Green. I would say probably 200-300 people, especially older people, that just aren't confident going in at the moment. And I can completely understand that. Mm-hmm. I could probably name 25 people off the top of my head that were regulars that aren't going just because of COVID.
Wow.
And yeah, we've just got to respect that. But the crowds will grow. And obviously, yeah, the carrot of a new stadium. Yes. Once we get that new stadium, we can easily take 4,000 or 5,000 people without problem. But at the moment, if we get above 3,000, 3,500, it's not easy. You know, things like the water supply, we can run out of water, and we've got to get, you know, a water tanker in to help out there. And it will come. I think we've just got to be patient.
Yeah.
I mean, and, to be honest, right, sorry, the size of the place, 2,500, it's quite a lot of people.
Sure.
People travel long distances to get to us. Yeah. But yeah, I'd like to see 3,000, 3,500, and financially we need that as well. Mm-hmm. But obviously, thanks to Henry, we have a lot of sponsorship.
Yeah, yes.
Partnership, as he says. He's going to yell at you if he hears you said sponsorship.
That's right. We've got a lot of partners, and they're very, very keen to support us. And that helps, even though we don't get a huge amount of money through the turnstile. Mm-hmm. Through the partnerships, that's raised a lot of revenue.
Oh yeah, that's like the side benefit of being a vegan club and being the greenest club in the world, which, you know, that's what drew Sham and I and so many of the international supporters. We came for the values that align with our values, but a great benefit of that is we're getting sponsors that no other League Two team is getting. We're getting international sponsors because of what we stand for, and that's got to be huge on the revenue, you know, on the revenue side. And like you said, big shout out to Henry for his amazing work at developing these relationships and creating these partnerships. And I guess, you know, the new stadium, I want to hear your thoughts on this, because you're a Nailsworth resident. You are a longtime FGR fan. So I want to hear, like, the new stadium, I would imagine, some people are going to love, because it's going to be so much easier to get to. It's going to make the parking issue. I know parking is a huge problem at the current stadium. So I would imagine that alone is going to raise the number of supporters. But do you fear that the club risk losing a bit of its identity by leaving its home in Nailsworth? Yeah.
It is going to lose a little bit of its identity, but that's happened to lots of clubs. Lots of big clubs have moved from where they started off, and it's only going to be a few miles away, and it's going to be a far better location, a far more attractive location. I mean, people at the moment have got fond memories of the old ground that was 100 years ago. Sorry, 100 yards away.
I was going to say, you can introduce us to those people, because you want to know what their diet is.
Oh, yeah. The route, it will be in a different place, but I don't think that's any big, big deal. We've got to accept change if we're going to...
A natural progression.
It's a progression, Sean. That's right. I don't honestly think that's an issue at all. And we'll lay on transport from Nailsworth. Hopefully, electric buses will be running by that time. Yeah. They can come on the longboat, their barge on the canal. They can pedal there on their bicycle.
I love it.
It won't be a problem.
How can we get there, Phil?
Well, I'm afraid you're going to have to fly, aren't you, mate? You've got to come, because you're one of our key partnerships, you know. Podcast every week. Such big fans in the States. Beautiful city of yours. Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. I'm sure the number of fans in the States has increased enormously thanks to you.
Oh, I don't know about thanks. Probably in spite of us, but
I mean, you know, Nathan would say it's quadruple for us too, from 1 to 4. but we're trying, you know. But we're enjoying meeting people out here as well.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we've formed so many new relationships here in the city of FGR. Actually, this weekend, this past Saturday for the Oldham match, we were supposed to all get together at a big pub in Brooklyn. Unfortunately, the people who were going to host us got COVID, and so we had to cancel it. But they're doing okay, so shout out to them. And we also had a lot of people away this weekend, but we're growing. I mean, not us, but the community, like the FGR community, is growing so much in the U.S. again, because people are becoming more passionate about the environment, more passionate about animal welfare. And it's just a beautiful thing. And Forest Green is the natural connection there, and still the only, you know, the only club in town or in the world, you know, who does what they do.
Unique.
So it's a beautiful thing seeing this club grow and building relationships here in the US with like-minded people. It's awesome. Awesome.
I mean, our supporters club are doing a lot of good work as well, as far as boosting attendances and spreading the message, not just of the men's team, but the women's team and the academy and the ambassador scheme. Are you members of the supporters club?
I think we are.
You know, it's like, well, you get a newsletter every month.
So it's unclear to me because I don't remember. We were part of that international fan brigade.
Yeah.
And then we get emails from the supporters club about other people in New York, and we're connecting with them. I don't know for sure if we're officially members though. Yeah. So we got to figure that out.
Should we have paid dues? Because if that's the case, we are not.
I think we aren't, because Rowan, one of our friends here in the city, he's been a member of the supporters club for probably 3 years now.
Right.
He has a card, and we don't have a card, so I don't think we've officially. We should become though. We're gonna figure that. We'll sort that out right after this.
Go to the website of the supporters club, fgrsc.com.
Yes, done. We're doing it right. We're sort this out right after this call.
Good.
But back to our journey to Nailsworth, Phil. We are coming to Nailsworth in April. Cannot wait. Flights booked.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll be there for Oldham at home, and then we're going to go to Bristol Rovers away. Cannot wait. So, Phil, where should we stay? Should we stay in Nailsworth? Should we go to Stroud? Should we stay in Gloucester? What do you recommend?
I think I'd stay in Nailsworth, but you've got to look around the area because there's so much to see and do in Central. Yes. But Nailsworth's a good base. I mean, somewhere like Egypt Mill is good. There's lots of Airbnbs. But you've got to meet a lot of us as well. Come to our houses. And, you know, we'll have barbies and evenings out. And, you know, fantastic.
Phil, I cannot wait. I cannot wait. But that pesky roundabout in Nailsworth, I keep hearing about.
Yeah, it's a bit of a pain, but...
roundabouts,
do you, in the States?
I'm sorry?
You don't have many roundabouts, do you?
Not many, no. Definitely not in cities.
Yeah, definitely not nowhere in the cities. And they're rare. And when I get to one, if I'm driving, I have no idea what to do. I freak out at roundabouts because I don't know what to do. Do I go? Do I wait? I hate roundabouts. I think they're probably a much more efficient way to, you know, maneuver intersections.
Keep traffic moving, right? Exactly. Keeps it moving, but slowly.
But because we don't have any or many, I have no idea what to do when I get to one. Well, Phil, thank you so much for your time. We're going to wrap it up here in just a minute. But we have one more question for you, Phil. You seem like a very wise man, a man with a lot of wisdom. give us your most important life lesson. It could be about cacti or could just be about life. But what's one thing, you know, that you've learned through all these years that has been important in kind of guiding your life, your happiness, your success, all that?
I think giving time and attention to what matters, because life at the end of the day, it's how you spend your time, and it's a gift, and you really got to make the most of it. And to me, it's trying to develop kind of close, trusting relationships with people, your kind of parents, your kids, close friends. And you've got to know what makes you happy. You know, you've got to know what your core values are. And you've got to try and make a difference. And that's what I tried to do in my career. And that's what I still try to do now I'm retired. And I mean, basically, you just got to get on with life, haven't you? You don't procrastinate. If you know what makes you happy, you've got to go out and do it. And that's what I've tried to do over 70 years. And I'm still doing it. And I love the fact that I'm still passionate about my cacti and still passionate about match days and going up the forest green. And, you know, that's fantastic. I love my food. I love my beer. I love my family. that's life's been very kind to me. But I still look ahead. There's lots I want to do. I want to travel, see this wonderful planet of ours. But we've got to look after it, you know. I think that's important for all of us now. We really have got to be aware of climate change. And if you sign up to Forest Green, that's part of the deal. It's not just the football, it's the kind of the green credentials as well.
Yeah, and you so beautifully put, and I think there's so much passion in sport and especially football, and we just love that that can now carry over and expand to, like you said, taking care of our world, being more aware, making sure that next generation of stewards is, you know, is enjoying life, having fun, and also, you know, being conscious of the environment around us.
Yeah, that's right, mate. Yeah,
very well put. Well, Phil, thank you so much, man. It was such an honor to meet you. We've heard so many great things about you, and I actually have like 20 more things I want to ask you, but we don't want to take up your whole day, so we're gonna have to have round two.
Because we're pretty sure your passion is not spending 2 hours with two millennial Americans.
That's right. Spending your Sundays with dummies like us. I don't think that's one of your passions. That goes against everything you just said in your life lessons. But Phil, we got to have you back on because I have so many other questions I want to ask. And this was awesome, man. This was such a pleasure to get to know you. And again, it's like everyone we meet from Forest Green, it's like phenomenal people, phenomenal humans. And that's what makes this club so special, so successful on the pitch and off the pitch. Phil, man, pleasure meeting you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay. All the best for Christmas. Cheers.
Thanks, you
Thank
too,
you.
Phil.
You too. Cheers. Phil Butterworth. Oh, my God. What a chat, man.
So
I love
fun.
That guy. I wish we wanted to chat more. The only annoying thing is, well, you know, we had another conversation lined up next, so we had to, like, cut it off, but I had so many, like, follow-up questions and thoughts I wanted to ask him about. But anyway, we're going to have him back on. I hope he'll be willing to be seen
just another
with
guy
again.
That you could share a few pints with and just learn so much and just have a blast. Yes. Enjoying their company, you know, that was great.
Surrounded by cacti,
so don't worry, you're safe.
All right, man. Phil, thank you again so much. That was awesome. All right, let's move on to Craig the Leg from Mansfield Town, the Mansfield Matters podcast, and whatever the BBC Mansfield, it's probably called BBC Mansfield. He is the Billy Hunt / Ash Loveridge of Mansfield. Awesome chat with Craig to get us pumped for Mansfield Town for the bounce back win against Mansfield on Saturday. Here we go. Let's go to Craig. Boom. We go behind enemy lines today with Craig Priest from Mansfield Town, from the Mansfield Town podcast, Mansfield Matters. Craig, welcome to the pod, my friend.
Thanks very much for having me on. This is a strange experience to be. I was expecting when you said two Forest Green fans to hear this sort of accent going on. It wasn't the accent I was expecting, to be honest.
What are you talking about? This is the Gloucestershire accent, isn't it?
So all Forest Green fans talk with that accent, do they? I look forward to that. I mean, I don't know. I'm really intrigued to find out why, out of all of the teams in the UK, that you are following Forest Green Rovers. This is what's drawn me to this.
I love it. Well, we'll tell you that later. But a little hint: it's we just love lime green jerseys, kits. I guess
zebra patterns, baby.
That's right. Okay. We love zebra patterns. We love a good zebra pattern. Well, Craig, welcome to the pod. You must be on like cloud nine right now because Mansfield Town are hot.
Yeah, it's incredible at the minute. I mean, a couple of months ago when we didn't win in like 14 games, we were thinking we're going to have another season struggling against relegation, and we were losing all our players left, right and centre through injuries, suspensions, illness, various other bits and bobs, and we were really, really struggling. And I think nobody saw us sort of get there, but we made a couple of signings on loan and brought in a couple of free agents, namely Jonjo O'Toole, who's really turned things around for us. And for whatever reason, we've got a few players back from those suspensions and we've really started to sort of kick on. And to have 9 wins out of the last 10 games is incredible. Yeah. I was speaking to the manager, Nigel Clough, after the game on Saturday against Salford, where we won 2-1. And he said he's never, in the 14, 15 years he's been involved in football, he's never had something like this. I mean, you go on 10, 11 game, you know, unbeaten runs, but to win pretty much all by bar one of those games is incredible. There's no draws in there either. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's great.
Americans would love that. So don't mention that too often, because then they're going to switch from Forest Green to Mansfield Town. We hate a tie in America.
Oh, but yeah, and Nigel Clough, he's been outstanding since he's come on. Is that right? I remember last season, I think we played you maybe. I don't think it was the match right after. Maybe it was two matches after. Maybe it was the match right after he got appointed And I remember it was a bad time because you guys had the new manager bounce. So are you pleased with Nigel so far?
Yeah, I mean, technically it was his first League Two game in charge of Mansfield, but he was in charge of the cup game in the Pizza Trophy before that. So there is that cup, one. Man. But
that's my favorite Mario Kart level, by the way, too. So the best Mario Kart level was Pizza Trophy.
that's what everybody calls it over here, anyway. So, well, that and other names, which I'm not going to say on a podcast because we're all professionals. when we appointed Nigel Clough, we were in an absolute mess. We'd not won a game at the start of the season. Obviously, fans weren't able to go because of COVID and games being behind closed doors, which wasn't a nice time for any of us. And then to see us losing, pretty much rooted to the bottom of the league with no idea on how to change it, something had to change. And we were in a really fortunate position at that time that actually, at the time we got rid of Graham Cochran, the former manager, there were a good list, I'd probably say, of at least six managers who could have come in and turned things around in terms of having that promotion experience, that saving relegation experience. And Nigel Clough was the top of everyone's list. He'd walked out on Burton Albion. That sounds like a bad thing, but no, he'd walked out to save them money. Him and his staff had walked away from Burton at the start of the pandemic to save them the money of paying them the wages, which was a really good thing for him to do. And he's always been local. He's obviously had Derby County, Sheffield United and Burton before us as well. So it's on his doorstep. And he's got a reputation of coming into clubs, you know, turning them around. We had a ridiculously high wage budget. He's managed to trim the fat on that. He's good with bringing younger players through sometimes as well. So we've got a good academy set up at Mansfield, which we wanted to work a little bit more closely with, and he's managed to do that. And he's got a good reputation of spotting a player. And so far, touch wood, he's managed to do that. And despite the poor run earlier this season, the signs are there that we're going to get there. And he said at the start of the campaign, and this is what I really like about him as well, because every manager will come out at the start of the season and say, the generic interview question is, so what's your aim for this season? All managers will say promotion. Nigel Clough didn't say promotion. He said, we're going to try and win promotion. The emphasis was on try. Mm. And that to me and to pretty much all Mansfield fans said, we're going to try and build a squad here that you're going to be proud of, that we're going to try and develop into something which we can bring success, not over one season and a one-hit wonder, something we can build and look back on in 10, 20 years' time to be proud on. And we're at this sort of perhaps second stage of that journey for us. It was, the first thing was getting away from relegation and trimming the wage budget. The second stage was the rebuild, and we're in that now. And at the moment, we're enjoying the run. So we're very much pleased with his efforts so far. The big question will be how we deal with the January transfer window. He's had two windows so far, and they've not been as convincing as we'd like them to be. So we'll see what happens.
Who do you think is going to leave?
I'm not sure it's a question of leaving. I think it's more a question of needing to bring in. We've got a striker shortage at the minute. We had a defensive crisis. James Perch, our best defender, got injured out for the rest of the season with a fractured skull. We've since moved then our centre forward, Ollie Hawkins, to centre half, who has been incredible for us. I wanted to ask you about him
because that blows my mind. So, he is a defender and a striker. It's great. Like, I've never seen that before. I see. I think maybe he's played 19 games. I think I saw maybe 20. 10 as a defender, 10 as a forward. What's happening with that?
he played there sort of growing up a little bit. And when he was at Ipswich before us, he was utilised there. Now, you've got to think of, he's basically 7 foot tall. So, he's a natural fit for playing at centre-half. And he's an experienced player as well. And that's what we were lacking. And at that point where it went to centre-back, we had enough strikers to deal without him up top anyway. So it was sort of a natural fit. But when he came in, he sort of helped to solidify us a little bit and just sort of bring us together a little bit more and make us a little bit tighter and really settled into that position. And every single week when he was named on the team sheet, he was playing centre-back. He's only sort of played, it's only really in the last two or three games that we've needed him since we've sort of brought Jonjo O'Toole in that he's gone back up front when he's been available. Although Saturday he ended up playing centre-half again because we had two defenders out. One was out injured, one was out ill. So he's very much play anywhere. And he said in a recent interview as well that he actually saw himself playing at centre-back for the rest of the season. So to go back up front, anytime he goes back up front now, just a bonus for him, really. So, yeah.
Nice. I wonder if Nigel Clough understood the punchline to that joke. Where do you play a 7-foot-tall footballer? Anywhere he wants. So
yeah, exactly.
It's going to be up front this week. We'll be back in some defense.
I mean, exactly. I mean, to be honest, he can play. He's that type of player as well, who doesn't matter where he plays because he's a threat from set pieces, and he goes forward for them as well. And you know, he scored a couple of goals from there. And I think as long as we're keeping tight at the back and we're getting goals up front, I think he'll be fine. I think longer term he'll probably look to for him to go back up front, but who knows? It's been a crazy season already, so there's no point me sitting here and saying, oh no, he's going to go back up front now, because we've played four different formations over the last two games, so I can't even tell you how we're going to line up on Saturday. So it's a mystery.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to ask next. Like, what's your kind of your identity in terms of... Actually, I want to ask both your identity as a club just off the pitch. What's the culture of Mansfield Town? But also, what's like the identity on the pitch in terms of the style of play?
Well, let's deal with the culture of the club first off the pitch. We're a community club. We're a family club. We've got fantastic owners in John and Carolyn Radford who have... You know, John's a local lad, born just down the road. He's done really well for himself, built up a multi-million pound business, and Carolyn as well, to her own right, has built up good businesses as well. Husband and wife team who came in a good, 10, 12 years ago now and picked the club up off of its backside, really rebuilt it, gave the stadium a lick of paint, brought it off the former landlord and got it back into the supporters' hands. And you know, longer down the line, are looking to give the fans a share of the stadium, and they've built a training ground as well, which is fantastic, and really developed it. Got us out of the conference, which is a horrible league to get out of after a couple of years. So managed to do that and really stabilise. We were on the brink of League One a couple of seasons ago, but to their own admission, they made some bad decisions in terms of sacking a particular manager. Trusted another particular manager who ended up doing the dirty honours and walking out and then making the wrong appointments. But they really seem to have got their head screwed on now. They brought in David Sharp, who's the grandson of the ex-Wigan owner, Dave Whelan, who was chairman there. He's a young CEO, 30 years old, who's running things on a day-to-day basis. And we just have this emphasis on family friendly. Everybody who comes to Mansfield Town is treated with a smile, with a warm embrace, and made to feel like it's their club. And that's something which happens sort of off the pitch. So that's pretty much the identity off of it. And it's about bringing people together, whether it's your first visit or your 4,433rd visit, you know, you're made to feel as welcome as anyone else. On the pitch, we're trying to create a culture of attacking football. We're not setting up to draw games, and that says it all about our recent run of form. We either win games or lose games, and that's Nigel Clough's philosophy. We started the season with a back four. Last couple of games or so, we've played with a back three with wing backs, and it's worked really well. Although on Saturday, it didn't work quite as well because we had Jonjo O'Toole, who's been the linchpin to that, missing through illness. So we had to change it up a little bit. First half an hour, Salford, who were a good side, really put us under pressure. We couldn't get going. Nigel Clough then clicked his fingers, changed to a back four again, and we were fantastic. So we have no real identity in terms of a formation and a lineup. We've been critical of that as a podcast for a number of times, but actually when you're winning games, it doesn't really matter. As long as you're keeping the ball out of your net and putting it in the back of the other person's net, that's all that matters. It's all that matters.
It's a simple game when you put it like that.
It's a simple game overcomplicated by many people. So.
That's right. Well, that's why it's a good game for Sham and I. We're not smart enough to overcomplicate it, so we keep it simple. Score more goals than the other team. Boom. That's how you win games. Farron Rawson, ex-Forest Green Rovers player. How's he doing for you guys?
Yeah, Faz is an interesting player. Obviously, another local lad born in Nottingham just down the road and grew up down here as well. So when he came in last season, again, like every other player, he had a horrible start because we just couldn't get going. Nigel Clough came in and sort of, you know, worked with him and got into an improved level. And this season, he's continued to improve. He's actually not started the last few games or so because he had to miss out because his wife was in labour. So he missed a trip and couldn't get his shirt back because O'Toole and the others were playing so well. Got his shirt back on Saturday because O'Toole was ill. Whether he'll keep it when we go to Forest Green or not next weekend will remain to be seen. But he's turning into a solid defender for us. All that's missing is a goal, because of course, you know, we all remember him scoring twice against us when he was at Forest Green. Let's hope he can sort of return the favour from a Mansfield perspective next weekend.
Let's hope not. But as we know, with Ollie Hawkins, you guys can turn defenders into strikers at any moment. Also,
listen,
just want to shout
it,
out.
it would It wouldn't surprise me if at some point we ended up playing a goalkeeper up front, because we actually put two on the bench in the week to fill spaces, so anything can happen when you're a Stags fan.
That's amazing.
I love the tactical fluidity.
I mean, I'll put some context to it. In the FA Cup, you're allowed 9 subs, and we only had 8 fit, and 2 of them were goalkeepers. So they were just on the bench for the experience, really. Okay. So
yeah, you guys are killing in the FA Cup too. You beat Sunderland. You beat another ex-FGR player, Carl Winchester, at Sunderland, and then you beat Doncaster. I think that's right.
Yeah.
So you guys are still alive in the FA Cup. Who's your next opponent?
We've got Middlesbrough, which is good. I think it's the 8th of Jan. I think it's an early kickoff. It's going to be shown overseas on telly. So looking forward to that one. We've played them a couple of times in the Cup. Looking forward to them. And I think a lot of Stags fans were actually disappointed when that draw came out, because everybody at this stage, you know, wants the Manchester Cities. They want the Arsenals, the Chelseas, etc. But for me, you know, Middlesbrough are a good side. They're chasing the playoffs in the Championship. It's an actual winnable game where we will get some TV money and a bumper crowd. Yeah. So a good FA Cup run for me is not reaching the third round, because for a League Two club, if you get a good draw along the way, you should be reaching the third round anyway. So for me, I'd be looking at the fourth round minimum.
Nice. Well, shots fired at us.
Yeah.
there. Not making it past St. Albans City. Anyway, we'll move on. At least we're doing well in the league. So I want to ask you then, going on to the match on Saturday, what do we, as Forest Green Rovers, what do we need to do to win this match, in your estimation?
You know, it's a very difficult one, this, isn't it? Because you look at the form table, and you've got in the last 6 games, Mansfield are top of the form table, Forest Green are second in it. It's like that question, not quite what comes first, chicken or egg. It's more like what happens when an immovable object meets an unstoppable force. So it's got draw written all over it. We are quite vulnerable sometimes from getting the ball in behind and from set pieces. But also, we do that well ourselves. So it's one of those games where I think the first goal will be key. Mansfield fans will be buoyed at the minute. They're very, very vocal. And I think if we can get under the skin of the Forest Green fans, I think we might take the game to them. But I'm expecting an epic game, although I'm hoping that Forest Green will sort of maybe have run out of steam a little bit after their epic game at the weekend. 5-5 with Oldham. Incredible.
Yeah. Listen, we decided to do Secret Santa a little bit early, and it's not so secret anymore.
we're just giving out goals. Giving out goals. You got a goal. I actually think that's an advantage for us, though, based on what we've seen so far with Rob Edwards. Every time we've had a disappointing performance or result, like we did against Port Vale, like we did against Swindon, and like we did in the FA Cup against St. Albans City, we have responded big the following weeks. So I think it's a good thing I don't think it's a good thing. You should be winning those games when you're up 4-1 against a bottom of the table team in the second half of 4-1. In any case, it was quite a disappointment for everybody involved, and I think that's a good thing with Rob Edwards, because anyway, so far he's proven in his short time as manager that we bounce back from that. So I'm confident in that respect. I want to hear from you, though. What is your? You said it's got draw all over it, Craig. What's your prediction?
I think
we know that's not Nigel Clough's policy, though. So
no, we don't draw games, but we've not drawn a game in 11, 12 games, so we're due one anyway. Mm. What's interesting me at the minute, of course, Rob Edwards was up against Nigel Clough for Manager of the Month, and Nigel Clough didn't win it, and he's always said, I'm not bothered by it because it's not about me, it's about the team, which is great. But also, I don't know if you guys are aware of it, there's a sort of an unwritten rule in football that when you win Manager or Player of the Month, you automatically get cursed. And you've sort of seen it a little bit. So it'd be interesting to see if we can carry that curse on Saturday. Prediction wise, it will hinder on whether we've got John Joe O'Toole available and how we set up to play. I think it's going to be a very, very tight game. It wouldn't surprise me to end 2-2, but I've got to back Mansfield because Mansfield always matters. So I'm going to go 3-1 Mansfield.
Oh, 3-1. Wow. Bold prediction, my friend. Bold prediction.
I have to say as well, I have to say on that as well, on our podcast, we always do a podcast prediction league where we sort of invite our listeners to get involved with it as well. And I'm awful at it. So just don't take that for red.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear. Also, I just found this. I was curious if there are any celebrity Mansfield Town fans, and I found a guy by the name of Alvin Stardust. What a name.
Yeah.
Who's Alvin Stardust?
Oh, what you're asking the wrong person. I'm 30 years old. He's well before my time. Some sort of... oh, God, this is horrible if I'm wrong. That's horrible.
I look up now. It's a glam rock.
I feel like it's David Bowie's like third cousin or something. He's not Ziggy Stardust. It's my cousin Alvin.
Yeah. Yeah, basically think of that sort of, you know, like end of the pier entertainer sort of vibe who, for some reason, is associated with Mansfield Town. So there you go.
I love this. Well, Craig. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's one of those things. Clearly, you found some sort of Wikipedia link. I think it's one of those where somebody's had a few too many sherbets after a win and have just decided to put a random name in to associate Mansfield with Mansfield Town. But there you go.
Well, I don't know who would do that. Who would do such a thing? By the way, Sham and I are notorious Wikipedia editors. Sham, just me. But
yeah.
I've been all my edits actually have been kicked off. I have to fight them because I've put fact. We have a lot of players on the podcast, Craig, and we always ask them for some random facts about them, and then we go in and edit their Wikipedia page and add the random facts. But recently, some editor deleted all my edits, and they're all true. No. Everything I said was true.
This is where you need to just sack off Wikipedia and get your own little website and just call it something like Forest Green Facts or something like that.
There you go.
I'm intrigued though. I can't leave before I know what the strangest fact is you've ever found about a footballer is, because you talk to someone who also interviews players on their podcast. So I'd be interested to hear what's the weirdest fact you've found out about somebody is.
Oh, Sean, what do we got? I'm trying to remember.
If only the Wikipedia article was still up.
Yes. We usually have them come on and tell us two truths and a lie. And so, and they're usually very strict. So, for example, our goalkeeper, Luke McGee, he came on and said one of his lies was that he is afraid of tomatoes. But that was a lie. He actually isn't. So we put on Wikipedia that he's not afraid of tomatoes. So that was one of the things that got deleted.
But he does know somebody who is afraid of tomatoes.
But he knows someone, who's afraid of tomatoes. So we put that on there too. Luke McGee is not afraid of tomatoes, but his friend Derek or whatever is. But
that's probably the strangest thing we've heard.
They all got deleted. I'm gonna fight that though, because these are facts. We're not polluting Wikipedia. We're adding to the human knowledge.
We are not the Fox News of football.
As well, somebody who is a commentator at the minute and he's covering games left, right, and center, I always look for like little weird facts as well, because, you know, when the ball goes out of play and you've got dead air to talk over, it's great. Yes, so actually, I'm going to write that down, and every time there's a goal kick, I'm going to, if he doesn't dive for the ball, I'll say something like, Luke McGee there seemed a little bit afraid to dive for the ball, but one thing he's not afraid of is tomatoes. So I might add that in.
Exactly.
Perfect. Well, all right, in that case, let's drop a few more. Kane Wilson, you're going to be talking a lot about him because he's like our best.
He's been
best
marauding this season. Yeah.
Favorite restaurant is Wagamama's, which is something we never heard of. But anyway, apparently it's a big Asian fusion chain restaurant in the UK. Yeah. He almost blew up the team bus because he put metal inside of a microwave. He's vegan, actually. We have two vegan players, two vegetarian players. So
I don't know whether the chairman of Forest Green listens to your pod or not, but I'm going to say that you probably should just do a little edit and say that every single Forest Green player that you put on stays there vegan. Otherwise, I think it's in their contract that it gets torn up.
That's a good point.
There's the vegan clause there.
Oh, well, one thing Luke McGee is terrified of though is scary movies. So you can drop that one in there too. He's terrified of scary movies. But anyway, Craig, my friend, man, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Such a pleasure getting to know you.
We learned so much from you. Yeah.
Yes, you make us want to root for Mansfield Town, not on Saturday, but best of luck the rest of the season, my friend. I hope your hot streak ends on Saturday, but then picks up again right after Saturday. So best of luck this season, man. Worst of luck on Saturday, but best of luck this season, my friend.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Man.
Thanks.
Craig the Leg! Yeah. Oh, awesome, dude. Awesome chat. Made me, as these always do, these behind enemy lines always make me sympathetic towards the opposition team, which is not what I want to be.
Up to a point.
I want to hate them.
You want to hate them.
up to a point.
But you know, man, but all just right, crazy to learn about that the winning streak that Nigel Clough has been on, right? So it really whet my appetite for this match because I believe he, Craig himself, put it the best. It's like the immovable object versus the irresistible force, right? So, man, I'm ready for it.
Yes,
ready for this
exactly.
huge match coming up.
It should be a good match. Should be a good match. Shout out to Alvin Stardust. I think that was the celebrity fan's name. Anyway.
Yes.
All right. Now let's get to the segment that's probably going to get us taken off the air and Forest Green Rovers will forever want to disassociate themselves with us. Because next up we have Shams' friend who's got a very foul mouth and insults a lot of people.
But a strong passion for the beautiful game.
He's got a strong passion for
the Timbers
game above all else. And a strong passion for his friendship and for the Heaven's Elves podcast and Forest Green Rovers. He loves us. He loves Forest Green. So shout out to that. And then we also have on at the same time 15-year-old
Jack.
15-year-old Jack. We have 15-year-old Jack on. So hopefully he doesn't. Anyway, we'll see what happens. Here we go. They're going to talk about the match that they were both at, the MLS Cup. So let's get to them. Boom. We welcome to the pod two esteemed previous guests of the pod. Both, I think, would call Forest Green Rovers their number one League Two team, soon to be League One. But we welcome two guys who were actually at the MLS Cup on Saturday, the biggest match in men's American Domestic League soccer. The atmosphere was crazy. It was electric. These two were both in that stadium creating that atmosphere. We have Shams' longtime friend David representing his club Portland Timbers, and we have 15-year-old Jack, who, if you may remember, we met 15-year-old Jack at an NYCFC game, who actually recognized we're wearing Forest Green Rovers jerseys or kits,
so wild,
shirts,
yeah.
whatever, at the game, and Jack recognized it like, oh my god, that's Forest Green Rovers. So that's how we met. He's representing his local team and our local team, actually, NYCFC. So boys, first up, thank you for joining us. But a quick disclaimer, we got to keep this to 5 minutes. So you may have heard of 7 minutes in heaven. We got 5 minutes of jive. Here we go. First up, FGR David and 15-year-old Jack. Have you guys been keeping up following FGR at all?
Yes.
I've got you guys queued up. We're actually making the drive back up to Portland for the holidays. So I've got you guys queued up for, I've got to catch up on about 20 episodes. So I plan on doing that.
So that's a no.
But Jack said he has. Jack said he has. Yeah. And I know Jack has.
Or the scores of the.
No, Forest Green Rovers.
Like the scores of the games, right?
Yeah. Jack's been texting like yesterday or Saturday, the FGR game. Jack was like, what is going on? 5-5. This is insane. And it was insane. So love to hear that. We have Jack following FGR from abroad and David, not as much.
But queued up. They're queued up. They're queued up.
Yes, they're queued up. And we know your heart is with us.
Was that David?
I got the podcast queued up. I don't know if I'm necessarily gonna be like watching the games.
Fair enough. Resounding spot. Okay, let's go.
Hit him on the next one, Shimmy.
Next one. All right, so guys, we have to then come up to yesterday's final, right? What a thrilling final. For those that don't know, NYCFC went up early in the match, and then in the 94th minute, the very end, the Timbers equalized, sending it to extra time, and then finally penalty kicks. And the penalty kicks, NYCFC won. So I got to ask you how you guys felt about the game. So, Jack, how did you feel about those, classless Portland fans hurling beer at NYCFC player Jesus Medina? What did you think? Do you have any thoughts on that or thoughts on Portland Timbers fans in general, like David here?
I thought that was an absolute disgrace. And I believe that one fan that threw a beer at Jesus Medina, one of the best players to ever grace an MLS pitch, I feel like that fan represents all Timbers fans.
And oh!
Disgusting. And I never want to go back to Portland, Oregon again or that terrible Providence Park Stadium.
Wow. Oh, David, your response.
What? So it's funny you mentioned that because I just read on ESPN that they found the guy that did it, arrested him, and banned him from Providence Park for life. So,
okay. So
do you disavow?
I wholeheartedly disagree that that's a representation of all Timbers fans. I think like on the Timbers subreddit, you had a lot of NYCFC fans coming in to say, to thank Portland for being welcoming. And like, even after the game yesterday, like it was a pretty cordial atmosphere. Throwing a beer, you know, throwing the beer on the pitch is an absolute disgrace. And like, you're right, that shouldn't happen. But like, you know, they caught the guy, they arrested him. Like, you know, I don't really, I think that's sort of harsh to say that it's all members of the Portland Timbers fan base that should be held accountable for that. But I don't think everybody I met from NYCFC was super chill. You know, you know, even after the game, just like, hey, it was a great match. Atmosphere was just electric. Like,
wild. Okay, so you're sticking up for Portland hospitality a little bit then.
All right. So David takes the high road. Then there was a controversial final goal to send the game in extra time. It looked like a foul in the box. Should have canceled out the goal. What do you think, David?
It shouldn't have counted. It shouldn't have counted.
Thank you. Wow. Okay.
David, you're killing me here. You're taking the. You're being a gracious in defeat. I was hoping for some.
I know. Like, I'm not gonna be delusional about it. Like, if that's VAR, if that goes back and gets reviewed, that goal doesn't stand. Like that. We definitely got away. We got away with one, and I felt like, I don't know, maybe karmic retribution in the shootout as a result. But like, that shouldn't have counted.
Okay, so take us into that moment real quick, then, David, with the equalizer. The last text that I saw from you the game was that we were shirtless during the PK. So from that equalizer on, what was it like for you there as a Timbers supporter?
Once we got the equalizer, like the whole, like you would have almost thought the whole place was gonna come down. Like we were rocking. Then shootout, like the guy sitting behind us, like, we gotta go shirtless for this. And it was so cold. I mean, Jack could probably back us up on this. Like, dude, like it was windy. It was so windy that like the MLS like bubble.
Oh yeah, the trophy balloon thing collapsed.
Yeah,
I saw that
collapsed. So it was definitely very, very cold, and I was pretty inebriated, so the physical presence was quite unpleasant, but like, the atmosphere was unbelievable.
All right, this has been a lot more cordial than we thought it would be, but so I guess leaving on a positive note, Shimmy, hit him with the last question.
All right, so guys, you've, I think, underscored how soccer is the gentleman's game here, you know?
We were hoping for some yelling back and forth. But unfortunately, you guys are too nice. Anyway, go ahead, Sean. Kill it.
15. Like, I'm not gonna go eviscerating him, but I mean, I think New York City.
He kind of eviscerated you. He kind of eviscerated an entire town when he talked about Portland.
Well, I was definitely exaggerating a little.
Yeah, I know.
There were many, many Portland fans in the section next to me, like flipping all of us off and like pointing right at me, and she was just like. Like,
so disrespectful. I mean, you see that, like, Sham, like, you know, you and I went to Michigan State football games together. Mm-hmm. I think those are just people that, you know, they take the tribalism of sport to, like, a whole nother level because they're trying to make up for something they don't have in their own life. So that's the prerogative. Feel bad that people actually have to behave like that.
David, you're absolutely right. This is insane.
You're 100% right. And I was hoping. Anyway, close. Let's.
Right,
ask
we got to close that.
Sean,
so yeah,
nice
we're gonna roll out on the positivity that David brought to this. Okay, so each of you, can you tell us what your greatest memory was from last night? What experience did you have that you will remember forever? And so, David, you can go ahead and start, and then Jack, since your team took home the trophy last night, you can finish this talk off. Go ahead, David.
I would just say from getting, because I stayed with my friend on the other side of the river in Vancouver when I flew in Friday night, and then to roll up into the stadium, like, you know, to roll up to, like, basically our parking garage for my condo, and like to see the line of people like snaking like three blocks away, and then just like we're tailgating up on the 15th floor balcony, and just like that, it was just like an organism almost. Like, you could, like, it just had its own energy to it, and then obviously the whole place just shook itself apart when we got the very, very controversial equalizer. But like, that, it beats any, you know, I've been fortunate enough to attend like the derbies against Seattle, F them, obviously. But like, this was an atmosphere unlike anything. Even like the Premier League game that you and I went to where Arsenal was defeated by Man United at Old Trafford, and Man United got to lose.
Actually, it was a 0-0 draw. I know Arsenal sucks these days, but it was a 0-0.
Yeah, no, it was a draw, you're right. But like, even that, I kind of felt like, you know, we only needed the draw to get it. Like, it was awesome. Like, just like, I guess maybe it being like somewhere I've lived the last couple of years, and just like that atmosphere, just being around, like the hype this entire week was just unbelievable. So pretty much probably the one thing I'll take away from is like, yeah, that equalizer just trying to bring the whole stadium apart, basically.
All right, nice. And Jack, before you give us your memory, can we find equal ground? Do you agree with David F. Seattle?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, yeah.
Let's go, F Seattle. Let's go.
All right, so go ahead, Jack. What was your most enduring memory from yesterday?
I mean, like, I feel like this is kind of a weird thing for an NYCFC fan to say, but definitely what's going to stick with me is that moment when Mora scored that goal, because my eardrums almost popped. Like, it was actually crazy. Everybody was going crazy, and there were so many Portland fans like screaming like right next to us, and I mean a lot of them were pumping us off, but everybody was going crazy, and I just stood there in disbelief. Like, I was completely still, my jaw dropped. I literally like just wasn't moving, and everybody was silent. And then like about 30 seconds later, that's when all the NYCFC fans start cursing out the referee, because obviously she got trampled.
Oh, I love it. Well, we got to close out, gentlemen. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. I think we can all agree this. F Seattle, up the Forest Green Rovers. And
you know what? We wanted to bottle a little bit of that atmosphere from yesterday. It was much nicer than that, I think. But just so happy for you guys that you got to experience such a great American soccer moment yesterday. And David, would you like to flip us off here in New York just to kind of bottle a little bit of yesterday?
Let's go, David.
There we go. It's like we were there, Nathan. It's like we were there.
But I got to run, boys. I got to head to dinner. So awesome. 15-year-old Jack, thank you so much for rocking with us as always.
You're welcome.
David.
Of age, David. Thank you. Yeah.
And congratulations to you, Jack.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Enjoy it, dude.
All right, guys.
You guys were way nicer than we expected. But anyway, we appreciate that. Two great human beings,
yeah,
right here, Jack.
That's sportsmanship that I feel like is representative of the Timbers Army. Like, yeah, you know, I don't know.
I'm glad we have at least one nice Timbers fan in the building.
Hey,
there we go.
You did it, David. You convinced Jack. So
there we go.
Things happen on the Heaven's Devils podcast.
I love it. All right, David and 15-year-old Jack. Well, we're recording this part after or before we talk with them, so we have no idea what they said. We have no idea if we're banned. We have no idea if I just had the bleep button going for 10 minutes there.
I don't know. But what we do know is that they're both ardent fans and both FGR supporters, even if not directly. So we had to bring them together. This was the top moment in U.S. soccer yesterday. Our cup, you know, our final. So just men.
Well, we should say U.S. men's soccer. Because women's soccer. I mean, that the World Cup final is our
biggest. Yeah, no, that's true. The women's game in the U.S. far surpasses the men's game in terms of plaudits and trophies and things like that. So, yeah, thank you, mate. You're right. Yes. So, but for U.S. men's soccer and our domestic league, that was the pinnacle yesterday. Or was it? Was it what you just heard?
Yes. all right, let's get out of here, Shimmy. So Mansfield Saturday, we our prediction 3-0, Don Bernard hat-trick. What do you
got
Shimmy, real quick? 4-2. Interesting. So we're going to leak some more goals. I don't think so. I think our defense is going to come back from that. Boom, we got a Don Bernard hat-trick incoming. You'll love to see it. All right, Shimmy, let's get out of here. Up the Vegan Rovers, Shimmy.
We are FGR. Let's go. And you know we got to...
And you know we gotta
raise
hell,
praise
Dale, yeah, praise his name, brother. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you so much, guys. It means so much to us, and we will see you next week, baby. Bye.